I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Back in On The Drive. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Carrington Harrison. To the right, it is the sports machine, Sean Levine. Directly in front of me is Rob Brinton. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Dennis Leonard, Royals Hall of Famer. He was the wins leader in the American League in 1977. He had three seasons of which he won 20 or more games as a pitcher for the Royals. He will join us coming up at 4:30. Today would have been the Royals home opener. We'll also talk about Alden Smith, who was back in the NFL, and a crazy story as a result of the coronavirus. We will talk about all of that coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. So we need four callers. 913-576-7610, because I have a question and I want to know what side of the coin everybody is on. Sean, that sounds like a people's court.
There's a dispute and we need you to settle it. It's the people's court.
So, yesterday, two prominent members of the Kansas City Chiefs competed in a game of Madden. I don't know about you guys, but some of the most fiercest and competitive arguments I've ever gotten into with my friends was based on a game of Madden. Now, the score was 62-32. Tyreek Hill was giving Tyrann Mathieu the absolute beats. Tyreek Hill scores a touchdown and then decides to go for two. I don't know why you would go for two in that scenario, but play to the whistle. Tyreek Hill starts to showboat. Tyrann Mathieu just simply turns the game off at the end of it. This is my question. Is Tyrann Mathieu being a sore loser in this situation? Or is Tyreek Hill wrong for trying to rub it in the face of his boy? This isn't random guy on Twitter who was talking mess to you if you're Tyreek Hill. This is your brother. This is your teammate, a guy you've gone to battle with, a guy you've won a Super Bowl with, a guy who you've met his family, his wife and kids. Why are you trying to embarrass him in front of everybody? Number one, why are you going for a two-point conversion when you're up 30 points in the game? And then why are you going to showboat and dance with Tyreek Cohen? But if you're Tyrann Mathieu and there's 1 minute left on the game, why do you then rage quit in the way that he did and then start subtweeting Tyreek Hill after it? So that's the people's court question I want to ask you, Sean Levine. Who's in the wrong here? Is Tyrann Mathieu in the wrong, or is Tyreek Hill in the wrong?
Well, what do they say in real life when we're playing sports? Remember sports in real life? Remember that used to be? What do they say when a team gets upset because the other team's kicking their ass or running up the score? If you don't like it, stop it. How is that any different in the video game world? So I am 1,000% behind team Tyreek Hill here. Yeah, he was up 62-32 and went for two. In the real world, you're probably not supposed to do that. In the video game world, I don't care if you're up 262-32. You should still go for two. You still go for it on fourth down. You still throw long bombs when you're supposed to run the ball, because it's not the real world. It's a video game. And if anybody, especially an adult, would pull off an 8-year-old classic move, which is walk up to the video game system and hit the power button. How old is he now, Tyrann Mathieu? 28 years old?
Yeah, 28, 29, somewhere
in
that range.
And he's going to pull that move that we all did when we were 8 years old and hit the reset button before the game is over? Tyreek Hill is absolutely in the right here. And the honey badger is completely off his guard.
Rob, I need you for a second. I want to know in the people's court, before we go to the phone lines, who's wrong in this scenario? Is Tyreek Hill wrong for basically being salty and quitting the game before it was over because he was getting the absolute beats in Madden? Or is Tyreek Hill wrong for trying to rub it in his boy's face and embarrass him with people watching on Twitch? Who's in the wrong here?
Tyreek Hill's in the wrong. Listen, we've all taken the beats once on Madden. It happens. Late in the game, you're trying to blitz or something. You're getting smoked. Beat me over the top. Life goes on. Take your seven and give me the ball back. You don't need to add a two-point conversion. And to make matters worse, he went for two. And then on the two-point conversion, he was just clowning him by running spin moves to go backwards. That is absolute insult to injury. It's not needed, especially with a friend. You just take your seven. So I'm on Team Matthew.
Who got injured? It's a video game.
So Tyrann Mathieu, after the game, tweeted, yeah, I turned that blank off. That blank was lame you did on the last play. It's just a video game. That blank was disrespectful. But I've played you multiple times in person, and you ain't never done that. Funny what people do when they get an audience. Tyreek Hill was for real mad. Big mad about getting absolutely thumped yesterday in Madden.
You keep saying Tyreek. Tyreek was the winner, right?
Tyrann Mathieu was very upset that he was getting the beats on the Madden machine. All right, we'll go to the phone line. Shane, who's in the wrong here? Tyreek Hill for showboating against his teammate or Tyrann Mathieu for being salty?
Definitely Tyrann Mathieu. Look, I've been playing Madden for a long time. My 12-year-old son has beat me down, and I can't beat him anymore. And I've done it. I've got salty and quit. But it is what it is, man. He can play, and if he whoops me like that, then he whoops me like that. But even Tyrann Mathieu said it's just a game.
All right.
Since I don't know, is there a mode that you can just throw in the towel and quit? Or is the only way to quit a game of Madden to walk up to the machine and hit power?
Online, you can do what they call a friendly quit. So, like, if you and I were playing Madden and I was up 28-0, we can just jointly agree that
I won
the game.
But that's not what this was. This was not a friendly quit.
They were playing the game.
This was a very unfriendly quit.
It was in the middle of the game, and he just turned the game off. Like, he got up or used his controller and just turned the game off. No, they did not jointly agree to end the game. One person agreed to end the game, and that person was Tyrann Mathieu. All right, we're doing a people's court here. Who are you more mad at in this scenario? Tyreek Hill for running up the score and trying to embarrass his teammate, or Tyrann Mathieu for being salty that they lost in Madden yesterday? Jack?
I am 100% on Team Tyreek Hill on this. And what I would ask people to say is Tyreek Hill's fault for running it up. I would say that Tyrann Mathieu is probably the most competitive person on that team, and if the roles were reversed and he was the one up 30, he would have been doing twice the showboating that Tyreek was doing. So that's my look at it.
I appreciate the phone call. That's Jack weighing in. This is why I'll side with Tyrann in this regard.
I don't know if Jack's right, but I agree with him. If Tyrann Mathieu was the one who was having the better game, something tells me he would run up the score on his homeboy, too.
This is where I'll side with Tyrann Mathieu, and I'll be on his side. Now, I didn't like the carrying on he was doing on Twitter afterwards, but that's just Tyrann Matthew's personality. It sounds like they've played Madden before, and Tyreek's never gone out of the way to try to purposely embarrass him. Now, when you know it's on Twitch and you know people are watching, A, why are you going for two when you're up 30 against your boy? It'd be different if, you know, you were just talking mess and I've been challenging you this whole time. You're doing it for charity. I doubt in this scenario, Tyrann was doing big talking behind the scenes. I assume somebody, EA Sports, came to him and said, hey, let's do something to promote. Let's try to raise a little bit of money for coronavirus. And they're like, sure, we're happy to play. We know each other. We're cool. In that scenario, why are you going for two? Why are you trying to embarrass your boy? I just don't get why you would do that in that scenario. And we all know how people get about video games. We all know people how they get about competition. Tyreek was doing that purposely and intentionally to make his boy mad, and his boy got mad. You can't cry wolf when you know your boy got mad in that scenario. I understand you guys of go out there and stop him. I don't think that Tyrann was mad that he was losing in the game. I think he was mad that Tyreek was purposely trying to embarrass him in the game. Those are two different things. I'll side with Tyrann on that one.
Well, you know what, man? If you want to play a game that the score is almost always close at the end, play NBA Jam. Don't play Madden because nobody's ever beat another team in NBA Jam by more than, what, 10, 12 points? A close game, like every game is close at the end. Most of the time it's a three-point shot to either win, lose, or send it into overtime. An ass kicking in Madden happens all the time. If it happens to you, take your ass kicking like a man.
Last one, Big T, who's wrong here, Tyrann or Tyreek?
So I think Tyreek Hill's wrong, and this is why. It just shows you what type of person he just really is. He probably just sits around playing it all day. And as far as the honey badger, you know, he just did a subtle Roberto Duran, no moss, no moss, and he just doesn't take crap from nobody because he's the honey badger. Let's go draft. Choo-choo, choo-choo.
That's Big T and Shawnee. I needed that train sound today. You know, I needed that on a Thursday. Train Thursday. I needed that.
It makes me feel a little bit better, although I don't necessarily agree with what he said. Like, I understand that all the stuff went on with Tyreek Hill last year and we questioned his character and stuff. I don't know how much you can question his character based on the way that he handled a Madden game versus Tyrann Mathieu. Come on.
Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll be joined by Dennis Leonard, Royals Hall of Famer. Today would have been the Royals home opener. Coming up, Aldon Smith is back in the NFL. I think this serves as a really good message for another NFL player. I'll tell you who that is coming up. So Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Dennis Leonard, Royals Hall of Famer. Dennis Leonard will join us on the show coming up in 15 minutes. So, very quickly, we'll get to Aldon Smith, who just signed with the Dallas Cowboys. I read a story from the United Press International. They said that right now the meat industry is, quote, overloaded with chicken wings. It can't sell because of the coronavirus. Mm. So, restaurants and bars, they ordered more chicken wings in anticipation of March Madness because that's a very popular item that people like to order at the bar.
Big chicken wing month.
But now that there are no bars, restaurants that are open in the traditional sense, and there was no March Madness, there is a surplus of chicken wings that they can't get rid of. I'm here to tell you, local restaurant, if you're doing a chicken wing deal, I'm the one to help you promote it. I'll even buy a couple of pounds off of you. I know a lot of people that got some freezers that we can deep freeze that and prolong and keep the lifespan of that chicken fresh. But if you're a restaurant that was anticipating having March Madness that right now you don't know what to do with the surplus of chicken wings, holla at your boy. I'm here to tell you.
I like chicken wings, too. I prefer the full chicken wings. I like Caribbean jerk, but really any chicken wings will do as long as they're a little crispy, and you give me some good blue cheese dressing to dip them in. Any chicken wings will work.
I kind of treat chicken wings like women in this context where, you know how you always get asked, well, what's your type? Man, I just like women. You know what I mean? Like blonde, brunette, dark hair. I just like women, you know? Chicken wings, drums, flats. I just like chicken,
but
bro. It don't matter to me.
But you have to prefer blondes or brunettes, like a little bit one over the other. Do you prefer flats or drumsticks?
Bro, I just like chicken. As long as it's well-seasoned and cooked properly, I don't care. You can give me all drums. You can give me all flats. You can give me the whole wing. I'm eating it. Is it seasoned properly? Is it cooked right? That's all I care about in this sense. Is she pretty? Is she somebody I can get along with? Is she fun to talk to? We can figure out the rest.
I'm an all-flats guy. I feel like it's easier to get all the meat off an all-flat.
I'm 100% a flats guy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sean.
CDOT's the most professional winger you've ever seen, Rob. Like, it's going to take probably a couple of months, but once you see it, you've never seen somebody get every piece of the meat off the bone. It's incredible.
Because that's the only way that you're supposed to eat the chicken.
Yeah, but I've seen other good chicken wing eaters. You really excel.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in eating the entire chicken. It frustrates me to high hell when I see people eat 60% of the wing, 70% of the wing.
Like, that's me.
I didn't come here to play.
I'm that
guy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm coming here to eat 100% of the wing. I'm even doubling back, and I might suck some of the bone marrow out of it. Like, I'm not playing around. Like, y'all be playing around with the wing. I'm not playing.
I'm embarrassed to admit, but
you know why I'm here. You remember when Marshawn Lynch said that? You know why I'm here? You know why I'm here. Give me the 12, give me some lemonade, and let me work.
See, I'll go through the 6, and then I pick back at them. So I'll go over, dip, and then I go back and I get the rest of the meat. But I'm not like you. I don't get every single piece of meat off the bones. What you pull off is absolutely incredible.
I'm not out here playing around. Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll be joined by Dennis Leonard, a man who strikes me as someone who absolutely loves chicken wings. So, Aldon Smith back in the league. Now, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I never thought we would see the day in which Aldon Smith would be putting on an NFL uniform and suiting up again. And maybe we don't get to that day, but at least being signed to a team is step one in the process. I think this is a very valuable message for Antonio Brown. I do think that part of the reason and a big reason why Aldon Smith got signed, aside from you got to do what you're supposed to do, stay clean, stay out of trouble, and do all those things, is he went away. We didn't hear from Aldon Smith. He wasn't in the news. Antonio Brown is in the news every week for foolishness and doing the dumbest stuff. If Antonio Brown, which he seems like he is addicted to the attention, if Antonio Brown could fall back for 8 to 9 months, we didn't hear from you, you weren't part of the narrative of the NFL, you weren't a story, and then you came back, I think you got a chance. But if every single story we hear about you is you committing more foolishness, it's just going to be very difficult. My message to Antonio Brown, I doubt he would listen, is, bro, follow the Alden Smith approach. Fall back, get yourself right. And a team like the Cowboys, who we agree, of all the teams in the NFL that are big on giving second chances to guys and maybe looking past a little bit of the character stuff, man, it's teams like the Dallas Cowboys. That would be my message to Antonio Brown.
Cowboys, Browns, maybe the Patriots. Sometimes they think they can get a guy right. Alden Smith, his first couple of years in the NFL, was maybe a better sack artist than any player has ever been the first 2 years in the NFL. So his first year at the 49ers was way back in 2011. He didn't start any games that year, and he had 14 sacks. And the next year, the 49ers went, maybe we should put him in the starting lineup because he's pretty good at getting to the quarterback, and he had 19 and a half sacks. 14 sacks, 19 and a half sacks, and hasn't played a full season since. And we're talking about 2013 when he played a few games. 14, he played a couple of games. Remember, then he became a Raider in 2015. And we're talking about didn't play the second half that year. Didn't play 2016, 17, 18, or 19. I understand we're not necessarily talking about a quarterback or a running back taking this time off. We're talking about a pass rusher here. But we're also see that talking about a guy that hasn't played in the NFL for 5+ seasons. I hope it works. I doubt it does.
I mean, I'm just saying here, if you're the Cowboys, I don't think it's any risk in this situation. If Alden Smith acts up one time, you cut him, and that's your last chance in the NFL. He's 30 years old. No one's anticipating him going back to being that kind of guy, but no one doubted Alden Smith's ability to play. Alden Smith, when he was playing, was one of the greatest pass rushers we've seen in the NFL, certainly at his age, as you alluded to, 22 and 23. If you had 35 sacks in your first two seasons at age 22 and 23, you had a chance to be an all-time great pass rusher. If you're the Cowboys, man, best case scenario is you sign him to a one-year veteran minimum deal. He signs for $1 million. If he can stay out of trouble and get you 5-6 sacks this year, that's great value for a guy that you picked up basically off the street.
I always root for local kids. I don't care if they went to KU or MU or K-State. Like Darren Sproles, local guy, I love watching him play. Same thing with Alden Smith, local guy. I don't care that he went to MU. I was rooting for him, and I still am. Think about a guy like, was DGB local?
He went to Springfield. So he's from Springfield.
So relatively local guy. It's crazy to think that both those guys decided to go to MU. Both those guys were good, at least for a while, when they were able to stay on the team in college. And then their NFL careers, what could have been with both those guys. Again, I hope that Alden Smith returns somewhat back to his old form. I'm with you. He's not going to be a guy that has close to 20 sacks ever again. But if he can just stay healthy and stay out of trouble, I think that's a win for Alden Smith.
Coming up at 4:30, we'll be joined by Dennis Leonard. Before we get to that, the Philippinian president, I believe that's how you pronounce it. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, sure.
He said that if you're out on the streets and you're not practicing social distancing, they will shoot you.
My soldiers to shoot you. I will not hesitate to order the police to arrest and detain you.
Yo, he said, if you aren't following the rules that we've set and the guidelines that we set, I will not hesitate to have the military shoot you. Said it cleanly. So you made sure that you heard it.
I feel like the next thing he was about to say was, and if they don't, I'll shoot you. And then he stopped himself.
He said, we will not hesitate.
Damn.
You know how ruthless you gotta be to say, yo, if you in the street, we're not even gonna ask you questions. We fire it.
Something.
My soldiers to shoot you. I will not hesitate.
He will not hesitate.
I told you. See?
He's not hesitating. He'll do it. He like, yo, I done told y'all 5 or 6 times, stop playing around with me. If you keep doing this and I find you in the street, we shooting you.
I bet it works.
Hell
I don't know if 100% of people are going to stay home, but I bet that 1% that doesn't and they end up getting shot by this guy, it's going to keep the next guy from going outside.
Have you seen the video in India where they were hitting the people with the sticks as they were leaving the church?
No.
So these people, they were in a mosque and they were praying, and they obviously weren't supposed to be praying because they're practicing social distancing. So they have like 2 or 3 military people and they have these big sticks and they're just hitting them as they leave.
Yo,
hitting them with sticks.
This is bad here. It's worse in other places around the world. And what sucks, the serious part of it is, it's just not getting any better or going anywhere. Like one of the scariest things about this entire last month that we've been dealing with, or at least last couple of weeks, nobody knows when it's going to end. there's not necessarily a light at the end of the tunnel. Every other major thing that's happened in my lifetime that was sad or major or catastrophic, there was at least a light at the end of the tunnel. I had some sort of an impression of when we were going to get back to normalcy. I have no idea.
Just, I can't imagine living in a country where the president goes on the television.
He'll
on
shoot
the
you.
Television He'll and says, you. I will not hesitate to arrest and shoot you if we find you in the streets.
That was tough out there.
Certainly some wild times. Coming up next, we'll update you on who is winning our Twitter poll when it comes to our Drive Snack Draft, and we'll be joined by Royals Hall of Famer Dennis Leonard. That's coming up. It's the Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on the Drive, coming up in 30 minutes, we'll get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Today would have been the home opener for the Kansas City Royals. So what we're going to do over the next couple of weeks is we're going to call up some Royals legends and get some stories about the history of the Kansas City Royals. The first guest we will have in this series is Royals Hall of Fame pitcher Dennis Leonard. He was the American League wins leader in 1977 to join us and celebrate what would have been the home opener for the Kansas City Royals. So let's go to the phone lines. Let's start with this. Thanks a lot for coming on today.
Well, you know, there's a lot of time to be had, and it's always enjoyable to, speak with the people.
So today would have been the Royals home opener. You've pitched in opening day in Royals home openers. What is that experience like?
Well, basically, they would have opened on the road this year, and there's always excitement for even, opening up the season period if you're on the road, but it's always special to have the opportunity to come back home. The fans are going to be amped up, ready to go. There's going to be a full house, and you just want to get the season underway. And it's a feeling of excitement. And, it's a shame that it just didn't happen this year.
What are the nerves like to pitch in that game? Because so much about baseball is the routine and the grind and how day-to-day it is. But that's just a different game within itself. What's the nerves like pitching on opening day?
Well, to be honest, I don't think they're any different than pitching any other day. It is the beginning of the season, or at least, it would have been the beginning of the Royals' home season. And, you go out there with the expectations that you want to do well and you want to try to win. I think, though, when you go out for any particular game, even during the season, you have those little butterflies before you go out. And then once the game begins and you get in the flow, you basically just forget about, quote, this is a home opener. It's a game. We're all out here to try our best and hopefully come back with a victory.
One thing I was really excited to talk to you about when I heard you were coming on was the Royals and Yankees rivalry, because I think it's hard for people like myself. So I was born in 1988. I'm 31 years old. I don't really have a concept of the Royals and Yankees rivalry, but talking a lot to Denny Matthews over the years, he just talked about how hated those rivalries were. Can you put into context the battles that you guys had with the Yankees?
Well, you got to realize, when we finally did win the division, the playoff system was a lot different. It was the best 3 out of 5 and off you go. And, not just losing to the Yankees those 3 years in a row, but in 2 of those 3 series, we basically lost it, one in the 9th inning and I think the other in the 8th. So to go down to the wire like that, we were frustrated. Obviously they were excited that they came out on top. But I definitely think in 1977, we probably had the Royals' best team and one of the best teams in baseball. So, there was a lot of frustration. After the first year you actually get in it, you're happy to be in it. The next year, you're wanting to win it. And then, when it didn't happen for 3 years in a row, it was very frustrating. We played against the same players. So, back then, yes, it was a heated rivalry.
I was just going to say, so I was reading a story today where George Brett said, quote, there was a real hatred between us. We look forward to playing them beginning in spring training. There was no love lost. Where do you think this rivalry started? Was it simply that you guys were trying to go to the World Series and they were, so it was two teams fighting for the same thing?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you play games during the course of the year, and you go along with the flow. But, when you get to the end of the year, there's only a couple of teams involved. And obviously, every ball player's dream is to go out and, be and participate in a World Series. And the ultimate dream is winning a World Series. So, when the Yankees bopped us out that first year, when Chambliss hit that home run, you know, we took it kind of, it hurt. It really did hurt. But you know what? That was the first year we were in it. And then to repeat that same feeling two more times, it got to a point like, oh, my goodness, are we ever going to beat these Yankees? We want to get to our first World Series as an organization. And, you know, even through the course of years, 79, obviously, we weren't involved in it. But then when we finally got to 1980 and we swept the Yankees, I think it was a feeling of relief finally that we beat them. And basically a lot of the players were the same as in the 70s. So, you know, it was just something that heated up. You know, I know there was that little altercation with George and Nettles at third base, and, you know, Al McRae took Willie Randolph out at second base. And if there was reviews in some of those games like they have now, some of the calls might have went our way, but they didn't. But it was definitely a heated rivalry. And when we got to New York, the fans hated us, and I think the fans here in Kansas City reciprocated. And when the Yankees came here, normally our fans weren't like that, but there was a lot of booing.
Right now we're talking to Dennis Litter, and he was the American League wins leader in 1977. He is also in the Kansas City Royals Hall of Fame. My relationship with Denny, I've been able to ask him so many questions about the great Royals teams of past. He actually says that the 1977 Royals, he thinks, is the greatest Royals team of all time, which when you put into context, they've had two teams win the World Series. So great praise about that 1977 team. What made that team so great, in your opinion?
Well, basically, number one, I think what makes things great is how many games you win. And if I'm not mistaken, I think we won 103 games that year. And, you know, during the course of that year, I remember at the All-Star break, we were about seven games behind the White Sox. And I'll never forget this. One of the little stories, side stories, Mr. Coffin, who never really came down to talk to the team, right after the last game at home before the All-Star break, he came down to the clubhouse and wanted to talk to the team. And me being there, I figured he was going to kind of read the riot act and, you know, get on us for not playing up to our potential. But when he came down there, he says, I'm giving everybody, I think it was $250, $300. He says, everybody that's not going to the All-Star team, go out and take your wife out, relax, and come back and go strong in the second half. And when we did come back, I think we won 16 in a row, you know, one stretch, lost one, won another nine or so games in a row. And before you knew it, you know, we were in first place, and the White Sox are way behind us. I think they actually finished third that year. But, I mean, we had the players, a lot of us, you know, had, I guess, career years. You know, we had great players, you know, up and down the lineup. We scored a lot of runs. We always played great defense. So, you know, when you look back at it, I think a team is measured by the number of wins they had. And that particular year, we had 103.
I'm just looking right now at the roster. I mean, Daryl Porter, John Mayberry, Frank White, Freddie Podtek, George Brett, Amos Otis, Hal McRae, Al Cowens. You had guys like Willie Wilson and UL Washington who became important members for the Royals moving forward that were guys on the bench. Like, I'm just trying to think of, might be the most talented team in Royals history.
Well, you know, and yeah, I mean, they all played good defense. Basically, you know, back then we were playing on turf, so most everybody on that team could run. So, I mean, and, we didn't have a lot of power. It was a tough situation in Kansas City. It was never really known for home run hitters park. But, you know, Big John, you know, he hit his share of home runs and drove in runs. And I couldn't tell you exactly everybody's statistics from that year. But I do know when things came together, I mean, we never thought we'd lose to the Yankees that year.
Right now we're talking to Dennis Leonard for a couple more minutes. He is in the Royals Hall of Fame, was the American League wins leader in 1977. Last week we had Danny Duffy on the show, and we asked him who was the guy that you went up against that you had my holy crap, I'm in the major leagues, and he said Derek Jeter. Who was that player for you? Who was the hitter? Who was the opposing player that you went up against that was kind of your welcome to the big leagues moment?
Well, God, I guess it'd be probably the first time when I got called up in 74. I came in relief, and lo and behold, we're playing the Orioles, and that's when Frank Robinson was playing for the Orioles. And everybody understands, you know, Frank Robinson's career and his statistics. He's a Hall of Famer. So actually somebody, you know, when you come up and play like that. But what the weird thing is playing against some people that you watched on TV. And that gets back to the Yankees, because I'm a New Yorker and I used to watch the Yankees all the time. And guys like Roy White, and Bobby Mercer. You know, some of those guys were still around when I came up, and here's guys that basically, you know, when I was growing up, I was watching them. And, you know, you have to pinch yourself a little bit to say, wow, I'm on the same stage with guys that I watched, you know, growing up, and they were on TV and they were in the big leagues. And, you know, once you got over that little thing, everything, you know, you're on a level playing field. You're here for a reason. You knew they were there for a reason.
Last question. I really appreciate your time. I always like asking players to tell us what their memories of Ewing Kauffman was. I never got an opportunity to meet the man, but everybody speaks so glowingly about him. What are your memories of Ewing Kauffman?
You know, he was a philanthropist. I mean, you know, look what he did for the city of Kansas City. And, I mean, when it came to contract, I felt he was always pretty fair with a lot of us. He made it a point back in those days. A lot of us are on, you know, 3- and 5-year contracts. He wanted to keep the nucleus of that team together as long as he could. And I think by him doing that, it really gave us a chance to stay and play together and put up the numbers that we did put up at that time.
Actually, last question here. I went back and looked at it. Whitey Herzog was your manager, one of the great managers in the history of baseball. What was it like to play for Whitey?
Well, I love to play for Whitey. You know, when I first got up to the big leagues, you know, Jack McKean was there, and he was been there for, I don't know, a couple of years. And, you know, things weren't going quite according to plan. And when Whitey came in, he relaxed the rules in the clubhouse. He just gave you the opportunity to be yourself. He says, first 6 or 7 innings are all yours, boys. But when it gets down to the last 2 innings, they're mine. So he was a straight shooter. For instance, I think in 1976, I won 17 games, but I kind of struggled a little bit at the end. And then when we opened the season in 78, he came up and told me, he says, okay, we're going to be playing in Detroit and New York. He says, you're not going to start in any of those series because we're playing predominantly left-handed hitters. And, yes, it was a disappointment to me because I think I had the most wins that year out of anybody. But, you know, he was honest. It wasn't like I was sitting there wondering, well, why aren't I pitching? So you can accept things like that. I know he liked power pitchers, and I consider myself a power pitcher at the time. So things got along, and he gave me a lot of leeway as far as when we had a meeting before we played a series, we'd always go over the hitters. You know, this hitter's looking for this, try to pitch him this way and that way. Well, he wouldn't even let me in the meetings. He would say, you just go out and throw. I don't want you to worry about hitting this spot or that spot. So he gave me a lot of leeway, you know, when I went out there to pitch. And, you know, back then, complete games, everybody wanted to complete games, and he gave me the opportunity to complete a lot. So I got great memories of him.
That is Dennis Leonard. He was the American League wins leader in 1977. He is one of the greatest pitchers in the history of the Kansas City Royals. He is in the Royals Hall of Fame. Mr. Leonard, it was an honor to talk to you. I appreciate your time. Stay safe and healthy out here.
We're all going to try to do that. And then to everybody else that's listening, you know, listen to the experts, and we'll get all through this stuff.
That is Royals Hall of Fame pitcher Dennis Leonard joining us on the show. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Before we do that, you know how we have the sounder for whenever people say or do very silly things in these times for when keeping it real goes wrong? Mm-hmm. We have to have a new sounder right now.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. It's Carol at Big Cat Rescue.
That's going to be our new alert to let you know that we're going to talk about Tiger King for a short period of time. So I'm here to give you guys some bad news about our good friend. Oh, Joe Exotic has the coronavirus. His husband has reported that he is in isolation right now because he has contracted the very deadly disease and highly contagious disease. Joe Exotic, get healthy, I hear, my man. Joe Exotic has the coronavirus.
I mean, Joe Exotic probably should have been in isolation anyway before all this coronavirus stuff came to the forefront. I told you yesterday, this isn't just a Joe Exotic thing or Joe Exotic's prison. Prisons all over the country are doing the same thing. So if you've had a cellie, you know what that is?
I assume that's like a roommate in prison.
Yeah, it's a roommate in prison. If you've had a cellie, they're essentially trying to separate you guys for at least the next 14 days. So hopefully Joe Exotic is on his own, making music, happy and healthy for a long time.
I remember when you said that it became real to you once Tom Hanks contracted the coronavirus.
Now it's real, real.
This is the one that really shakes me to my core. I mean, the one that really shakes me to my core is Joe Exotic. If Joe Exotic in prison can't be safe, then none of us are safe from this disease. None of us are safe if Joe Exotic can't be safe in a maximum security prison in Oklahoma. None of us are safe.
I'd imagine that that's probably not the best. Well, not there's a good place. Not there's a good or best place to contract the virus. But in prison, last time I checked, you're not allowed to leave. Very close proximity. Not a lot of social distancing. Somebody tells me that Joe Exotic is not the only one with the coronavirus in that particular prison.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. It's Carol at Big Cat Rescue.
That concludes our Tiger King talk of the day.
That's it?
That's going to be it. I'm just going to randomly throw that in there. Boom. Carol Baskin's going to say, hey there, you cool cats and kittens. I'm going to update you, and then we're out. It's that simple.
Sad,
then we're out.
Somewhat sad. I don't know if I quantified it as sad. News today, I appreciated yesterday's news more. Thought it was more entertaining when we heard O.J. Simpson's thoughts on Carol Baskin's husband. But we'll see what tomorrow brings.
I mean, tomorrow we'll see what an update is. I'm just here to update you that Joe Exotic, if you watch the show, his second husband has now confirmed that he has the coronavirus and that he is in isolation. I hope that Joe Exotic gets well.
Third husband. Remember, he was married to two at the same time.
This is his third one. You're right.
Well, okay, he's had a lot of husbands.
No, you're right. This is his third one. I forgot. He had the two. Yo, did you see the dude? Hold on. I got to play it again.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. It's Carol.
I knew you had something else for us.
Do you remember? So his first husband had like seven teeth.
Maybe four.
Did you see that he has his mouth fixed?
No, I did not see that.
I got to show you the picture during the commercial break. I swear he has the pearliest white teeth you've ever seen in your entire life.
You sound surprised. What'd you think he was going to do? Surely you got some money. If you were that guy with four teeth in your mouth and you finally got some money in your bank account, how would you spend it?
I just didn't think that maybe the 17th most important character in the show, that Netflix was hitting that person off with cash. I just didn't think. Now, I think that Jeff got paid to be on the show. I think Dot got paid to be on the show. Carol Baskin. I didn't think that the first husband received enough. Like, that Netflix check must hit a little bit different.
With the success that Tiger King has had?
That man had three teeth. The man had three teeth.
And he's
now
getting a check, and the girl got her arm ripped off to getting a check, and all the husbands are getting a check, and the tiger that pulled down Joe Exotic is getting a check, and whoever beat Joe Exotic in the gubernatorial race is getting a check. Everybody's getting a check. That thing's making so much damn money.
I mean, I'll show you the thing here. I'm just here to tell you that the first husband from Joe Exotic, I can't remember the gentleman's name, the one that had the tattoo.
I know what you're talking about.
The one that said, I can't imagine. Like, I know people that have their wives or their girlfriends or their husband's name tatted on them. I can't imagine feeling any way about a human being where it would say privately owned by on their body. Like, I love Rihanna. If that came to the breaking point where my body had to say privately owned by Rihanna, I don't know. The way his tattoo looked, come on now. That was nuts. There was a lot of crazy things in that show. The fact that, especially where it was, it said privately owned by Joe Exotic.
Yeah, we understand where it was. We get it. Private. Yeah, nuts. Nuts. Private nuts.
It was crazy.
We get what you're doing here, C-Dot.
It was crazy. Right.
You would absolutely tattoo whatever Rihanna asks you to tattoo in that exact same location or across your forehead,
nah,
and I guarantee it.
I can't do it. I'm not that cool. I'm not that cool of a cat or a kitten to do anything of that nature. Not even a little bit.
Well, I agree with that part.
Cool cats and kittens. It's Carol at Big Cat Rescue.
I hate Carol Baskin.
I hope that Carol's having a beautiful day. Coming up at 5:00, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. So the Royals, they have been replaying a lot of past championship level games. We're going to do the same here at 610 Sports Radio. I believe that starts today at 7:00. So if you want to hear some vintage Royals, I keep it locked in right here on 610 Sports Radio.
So let's pick our favorites, because you're going to get a chance over the next few weeks to hear some of the classic Royals games of all time. If you go back, see that to, let's say, 2015, first you're up. Favorite game from the 2015 run. Favorite game. And you know what? If you want to pick a 2014 game, you can do that also.
I would say in 2014, ALDS Game 2, the Hosmer home run game against the Anaheim Angels, or Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, whatever they're calling themselves these days. That's probably the game I'll think most fondly on. I was at the wild card game, so the first two games, they won that first game against the Angels. And you were like, all right, cool, we'll see what happens, but they're probably still going to lose the series. When they won the first two games in Anaheim and how they did it, I remember thinking to myself, man, the Royals are good. And that was like the first time it had like really hit me that the Royals were good. Because it really went from, if you remember, that September – they were all right, and then you woke up and they were in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then I didn't really care what happened after that. I got to see the Royals win a playoff game at Kauffman. I was cool with anything that happened. And then after that ALDS game too, that was the first time it hit me that the Royals were really good. So yeah, that's the one I'll always think very fondly on, ALDS game two against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Crazy to think that they went on to sweep those Angels, then they went on to sweep the Orioles. We remember those, what is it, those O's ain't royal? Is that what the t-shirt
said?
That
was what the shirt said.
What a postseason run, because I'm with you. If they got in, that was going to be good enough for me. Everything else was icing on the cake. Rob, your favorite?
So from 2015, my favorite is probably the CS game two, where the bloop in front of Batista led to the rally where the Royals eventually win, because Jose Batista was such a great villain. And for him to just mess up in that moment led to a win. It felt great. From 2014, similar to you guys, I had game three of the CS when the Royals won and Moose leaned over the dugout and made the catch. That's when it like dawned on me. I'm like, the Royals are up 3-0. They're going to go to the World Series. It like had gone like from fun story to holy cow, it's going to happen.
Both of you guys are burying the lead here. Isn't the game that everybody thinks about that wild card game against John Lester? And maybe if it's somehow not that game where the Royals made the greatest comeback in Major League history, how about the comeback versus the Astros the next season? I don't understand how I could ask you the best game and neither one of those came up. What moment comes to mind from that run, C-Dot?
I mean, I feel like now I have to pick the Alex Gordon home run based on what you just said. That's like the only one I could pick is the Alex Gordon home run. I mean, the Hosmer home run is still it for me. I'll go off the wall here with the moment. Johnny Cueto in game five in 2015. Johnny Cueto was very average up until that point, and Kansas City was not too fond of Johnny Cueto. You had been sold that he was going to be an ace and he was going to be a stopper, and to that point, he was not a stopper. That was back at home. That was a day game. And you were thinking there, the Royals can win the trade if they advance in this series. And Johnny Cueto was good. He was good in that game. That was a really pivotal moment. To go a little bit off the board, I'll go ALDS game five, 2015.
Saying he was good in that game undersells what he did. Didn't he throw a complete game two hitter? If I remember correct?
I don't think so, but I could be wrong.
Three hitter? Like, it was either that or...
I don't think that was it, but I mean, I could be wrong. Let me look it up.
But you know my memory shot since college, but all I remember is Johnny Cueto had a game that was damn close to a perfect game. I remember he gave up a hit early or a run early, and then the rest of the game, it was just lights out. Rob, your moment?
So, obviously, Alex Gordon's home run is the obvious one, so I'll take that one off the board, and I'll go a little off the wall. I'll stay in the 2015 DS, and I'll stay in game five. For me, it's Kendrys Morales' home run, and then the skip and the look back, the look, just arms extended, like, we beat you. It was like the ultimate overcoming, and that Astros series back and forth. That skip, arms out after the home run moment to me really sticks out.
Again, you guys buried the lead. The moment from that two-year run was Yelsidis Escobar, first batter of the World Series inside the park home run. The fact that that happened, I think, was the catalyst for what came the next week and a half. What player comes to mind? Think back to 2014, 2015. You could probably say one of seven different dudes.
Mike Moustakas.
Really?
I'd say probably say Moose 1, Kane 2 for me. Moose was a average to bad baseball player before the 2014 playoffs. And something happened in 2014. I don't know what it was with Mike Moustakas, but the 2014 season transformed Mike Moustakas. That his growth and evolution over that time is what always stands out to me most. So I'll go Moose.
Rob, player.
I'm going to go a little off the wall here. I'm going to go Edinson Volquez. Because in 2015, if you recall, in game one, he pitched. And during the game, the reports started coming out that I believe his father had passed. And the whole story was, will he come back this series? He pitched well. And that the whole conversation about Edinson Volquez was, will he be back? Well, not only did he come back, he pitched a hell of a game in game five. Everyone forgets about it because Matt Harvey was dealing. But Edinson Volquez, who was far from an ace at the time, had a great performance in game five when the Royals clinched the World Series. So I'll say Volquez.
I think of Eric Hosmer. Every time I think of that run, I think of Hosmer, then I think of Salvi, and then I probably think of Alex Gordon or Yordano Ventura. Mike Moustakas would have been pretty far down the list for me, but he was certainly one of the faces of that run. Quickly, because we're up against it. Where'd you watch the World Series when we finally won?
I actually was at home. I watched every game either at the stadium or at home for both two of the playoff games, So yeah, I was either at home. So when they actually won in game five, that was on the road. I was at home. I went down to Power and Light. Power and Light was not cracking in the least bit. Went down to Westport and it was an incredible night.
Yeah, I was at the Well in Waldo, and It was on a Sunday night, right? Game five, and it went extra innings, and it was got really cold eventually. And then the Royals won, and they shut down Warnall, and it was an absolute party where people were drinking and smoking and doing other illegal things, and the cops were like, eh, you know what, party like it's 1985.
I was at Power and Light because last minute me and my friends decided if they win, it's too big of a moment to not be somewhere cool.
Gotta be somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, so we were at Power and Light, and we got there pretty early, so we were on the inside, so it was still pretty fun after they won. But then we went up and met with some friends afterward, have an apartment downtown. I do remember leaving Power and Light being like, this is not the scene I thought it was. Inside was fun, though, and I enjoyed being in there for the win.
Am I the only one that wants to say it was more fun when the Royals won the World Series than when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl?
Excuse me?
Am I the only one that wants to admit it?
If that's your opinion, then fine.
The parade was definitely better for the Royals.
I mean, you were out from both of those times. Was it more fun?
Was it more fun? Let me chew on that, and I'll answer that at the top of the
podcast. Yeah, because you know you're wrong here.
Let me think about that.
You know you're wrong.
Let me think about it.
I'm not saying that it wasn't great when they won the Super Bowl. It was certainly great. It was more fun in 2014 and 2015 than it was when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl.
That's one man's opinion. I'll give you mine on the other side.
It was more fun. The hits coming up next is The Drive.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.